This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. It is hour two. Rolling along this morning. Good Wednesday to you at Sports Map Radio as we continue. Tony D and Ron Culver. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. Also talk Sixers and their big win against the Boston Celtics on the road. But they've done that before. They won game one in Boston. Now lead 3-2, heading back to Philadelphia for Game 6. Noah Levick will join us to talk the Sixers coming up at 45 past the hour. And tonight we got two game fives. Yeah, the Knicks and, yeah, game fives. We're going to New York tonight for the Knicks and Heat, and then going to Golden State or San Francisco for the Warriors-Lakers series. So tonight the Lakers have a chance to advance to the Western Conference Finals. And a win over the Golden State Warriors will do that in any of the next three games that are on the schedule. So whether it is San Francisco, back in Los Angeles, or back in San Francisco. Now, many pundits, and including us, are saying that Golden State should win tonight. Golden State should come out, nothing to lose other than the series, so you got your backs to the wall, so you got to blow up. You got to do something. And if you are the Lakers, and you've got a kind of, you know, been utilizing Anthony Davis and LeBron James, at what point would you throw in the towel of a game if you're getting kind of blown out early and get those guys off the court and get them rested for game six? It has been sort of theorized that you wouldn't even take them on a trip, but that's kind of been poo-pooed and been funny. It was more sarcastic than anything else. But the reality of it is that's what usually happens. When you see a game that is 127 to 100, when you see a game that is 127 to 97, when you see a game that's where the win is by 30 points, it is because a team is going to live to fight another day. It's either going to move on, and they're going to usually give up. They take the starters out. The game gets out of hand. A lot of times, and here's the other thing, a lot of times – the team that's leading in that particular scenario is home, and you know they keep scoring, they keep the crowd interested, they keep sharp while the other team is, you know, unloading the bench that they have to just go out there, and then a 15-point deficit that's not going to be overcome with 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter becomes a 30-point loss. If you're the Lakers, at what point would you say, I'm not going to blow out Anthony Davis and LeBron James tonight? Don't be surprised if that happens, if they're not playing in the fourth quarter of this game, if this game is out of hand. But I do want to be clear. I don't think if you're the Lakers, you take this game for granted or take the night off. If you can win this game, you win the game, right? I mean, people are like, just don't play them. And then you just win in game six in Los Angeles. What guarantee do they have that they'll win game six in Los Angeles? What guarantee do you have in any game where the Golden State Warriors, with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and coached by Steve Kerr, are going to allow you just to think that, well, it's okay, when we go back home, we'll just wrap this up? That's not their MO. Not only have they won four championships, they lost in two others. Like, there is this basketball team finds its way through playoff series. Now, don't get me wrong. They haven't been down 3-1 a lot. I think they were last down 3-1 against Oklahoma City a few years ago. But these are the world champs. You're not guaranteed just to regroup everybody and go down back to LA and win game six. Because if you lose game six and you go back to San Francisco and that Chase Center for game seven, good luck. I don't care if you got LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Good luck, because I've seen that play out a bunch of times. It's not easy, right? Now, LeBron James, I remember when LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers overcame a 3-1 deficit and won the championship. But this is the other way around now. Golden State's got their backs to the wall. So I would be very cautious with the idea that the Lakers should just kind of go through the motions in this one and rest up for game six because you don't know what happens. And I wouldn't want to go back up to San Francisco. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. They hear that a lot at chickendinnercasino.com because they have so many winners. That's because they have so many ways to win, including slots, blackjack, poker, and more. And, of course, you can step into their sports book, bet on any sport, and now it's the perfect time. You got the NBA playoffs rocking. Major League Baseball's in full force. Hey, that PGA Championship is coming up next week. Right now, listeners of Sports Map Radio and Wake Up Call get a special welcome offer. Go to chickendinnercasino.com/sports and get a 50% first-time welcome bonus up to $1,000. That's right. Get a 50% welcome bonus up to $1,000. When you go to chickendinnercasino.com/sports. So what are you waiting for? Become a winner winner today at chickendinnercasino.com. And remember to add the /sports for your special welcome offer. Again, winner winner chicken dinner at chickendinnercasino.com. So I'm going to ask you what your expectations, Mr. Laker, tonight in game five up in San Francisco.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I feel this way. I feel the Warriors are going to win.
Okay.
But here's the caveat, right? If it is a blowout, I say sit LeBron and Anthony Davis starting in the third quarter.
I do, too. I absolutely do.
You know, maybe have them sit the entire second half. Just watch. Let the reserves get some play.
Get your best effort in and see what happens.
Let's see what Hachimura can do with Lonnie Walker the fourth. You know, why not? They've been heroes before in the playoffs. Maybe they can pull something out. What my fear is that it's a close game. And if the Warriors are smart and they feel like they're in control of everything, they would keep it close. Because you can play it this way, right? You keep the game close, but if you feel like you can win at any moment, you know, like you're keeping like a 5, 6, 7 point lead the entire time, you're going to keep LeBron and Anthony Davis on the court.
There's one theory that has been floating out there too, which is if you're too lackadaisical, meaning you're too open to maybe just going up there and more resting guys, there's a chance that Klay Thompson, who's been struggling a little bit, Jordan Poole, who's been struggling a lot, somehow they utilize that to catch fire and find their rhythm. And that's not what you want going back to Los Angeles, is that you get those guys hot. You get to L.A., and then everything's on the, you know, everything's back to fighting the champs again. But I think you're going to see a double-digit victory tonight for Golden State, and how many minutes did LeBron play in that? Because 38 is, he's out there really running. I mean, he's out there really moving. You saw how exhausted he was in game four. I think that would be interesting to me to see how many minutes those guys get. And Anthony Davis, you know, would you call him Mr. Glass?
Glass.
Yeah, Mr. Glass. That's awesome. That's a great term.
I mean, he is.
Is that yours or did somebody come up with that?
I have no idea.
Yeah, take credit for
it. I'm going to take credit for it because that's, I mean, it's the best person I can think of.
Yeah, Mr. Glass.
I got it, man.
What movie was that?
That was Unbreakable.
Unbreakable, yeah. Yeah,
I mean, there's actually three movies, which I didn't know.
He's in a couple of others, yeah.
Yeah, he's in Unbreakable. There is, I think, a movie called Glass.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what the other one is.
I think you're right. I think he's been in a couple of other those M. Night Shyamalan thrillers. But Mr. Glass, it's Anthony Davis. But, I'd be watching the minutes tonight to see. Because this could be one of those nights where it's like, all right, 134-88. like bye, like that's it. That was done and quick. But the more focus is going to be on a well rested Laker team in Game Six. I just be really careful, man. The Lakers, they can win this series because again, the Warriors have to win three, right? And there's a lot of pressure. When there's pressure, sometimes you fail to live up to the pressure. But remember, as every series gets closer, like another win, the more the pressure comes back on you to close it out. And I think that the Lakers, if they put too much emphasis on a game six at home, are forgetting that if they fail to do that, they'll have to go back for game seven in San Francisco, where the Warriors don't lose a lot. They don't lose up there very often. But we'll see how that plays out. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. We've got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. Then we'll talk Sixers, who beat the Celtics last night. Denver Nuggets and the Phoenix Suns era. Phoenix hosting game six. It'll be coming up on Thursday night. If Chris Paul returns, again, that narrative changes on what Phoenix is going to have to do to continue to be in this series with Denver and to continue this. this series, despite, you know, that not eliminated. But the reality is that the big question that I thought last night was, yeah, you know what? If Devin Booker doesn't explode for 70% shooting and 40-plus points, can they win? Can they win a game? Does him and Durant need to score 30 each and be as efficient as they are for them to win games? And at some point, does Kevin Durant have to explode for 40-plus in a game?
I don't think he has it in him, though.
I don't know. I don't think he does either. I don't think he does either.
I mean, he's playing well. He's hitting the ground. I mean, there is a couple times. I mean, he's one of those guys where you see him hit the floor. I mean, he's borderline Mr. Glass as well.
You know what? Can I complain? Can I complain about something? I'm going to complain about some pundits here. I there's a lot of guys on Twitter that I follow covers the NBA, and they do a great job of really, you know, covering their teams and whatnot. When this team acquired Kevin Durant, it came at a sacrifice of depth. And everybody pointed that out. And I think that was one of the first things people pointed out was, losing some depth, losing some guys. But you get Kevin Durant, right? You get the trade for Kevin Durant. But when the playoffs started, even though there was only 8 games in which Durant was playing with his son's teammates and they went 8-0, a lot of these guys were saying the Suns are the best team in this playoffs, right? You go from 1 to 10 before the play-in tournament. The Suns are the best. They got Kevin Durant. That's the team to watch out for. Now they lose a game 5 in Denver without Chris Paul, and those same pundits are like, yeah, this trade is not working out. They don't have the depth. This is a big problem. We knew that it was a problem, but people thought that they still could go to the finals with the way this is constructed. Don't be shocked that the depth is an issue. It was supposed to be an issue, but they were supposed to overcome it. The problem in this series is not depth. That is an issue. But the problem in this series, it has been shaped by the absence of Chris Paul. Yes, Phoenix has won 2 games without him at home, but look at what they had to do that. They've got to win a game where they don't count on something extraordinary, and Chris Paul coming back to Game 6 could show us how.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb time here on a Wednesday as we get you to the midweek version of the good, the bad, and the dumb. So we're trying to get you into the weekend, good, bad, and dumb, but we start with the good of the day.
Good of the day. And Tony, you're going to love this good of the day.
All right.
It's a fun tradition that I have to highlight.
Okay.
And that is the annual tradition, or sometimes biannual tradition. I'm not sure how often this is taking place. Maybe you could shed some light on it. But it's the tradition of the revealing of Cocky.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yes.
So if you don't know who we're talking about, Cocky is the fighting chicken?
Fighting chicken.
Of the University of South Carolina. And I didn't know this, but the mascot is not known. Who the person is in the mascot is never known.
Yeah.
Until the big reveal. And this year the reveal was done at graduation. Turned out that it was a biomedical engineering student. Her name is Sarah Sylvester, and she revealed that she was Cocky by wearing Cocky's feet to the graduation.
Oh, very cool.
So there she is in cap and gown.
Yeah.
Wearing Cocky's feet.
That's awesome.
And then she proceeded to hype up the crowd doing all the performances that she does. You know, the running, the jumping, the dancing, the, you know, just hyping up the crowd. And you could tell that she is the mascot because those feet are huge and she did not falter once.
That's awesome. That is so cool. Yeah,
what a really good video.
What an honor that must be to play Cocky.
It is, and I had no idea that it was kept a secret. She's been Cocky the last 2 years.
Yeah. Wow, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And she's a biomedical engineer.
Biomedical engineering.
How did she keep up her studies?
I don't know.
And doing the Cocky appearances.
Yeah, because here's the thing, right? Cocky just doesn't appear at football games or basketball games. He is at everything.
Yeah, and then you had the women went to the Final Four.
Yep.
You had, you know, the football team, but I mean.
But he's at every home
game.
You're
at everything. You're at every home game.
But does Cocky travel?
Yeah. I don't.
Maybe,
don't know.
Right?
I've never paid attention. Maybe. right?
But it's a really cool. I mean, the video is awesome. And I think people, like, she was running back and forth, hyping up the crowd, and I think people were slow to catch on. Like, oh wait, look at her feet.
Yeah, that's great.
That's
how
cocky.
Awesome is that? How great is that?
So, but Twitter also had fun because, I mean, a lot of people were saying this is awesome. This, you know, this makes the Masked Singer look weak compared.
I don't know about that, but that's good.
One tweet I did like was, you know, it's like, you know, some of Sarah's friends going, hey, why don't you ever come to the game with us?
Yeah, you know? I know, right?
Like, do normal college things. You never show up to the football game. You used to.
That's funny.
But you never go.
I'm too busy with studying.
Yeah.
Oh. That's great.
Got to keep up my studies. I got a big exam coming up. Yeah. Maybe you have to choose an obscure major, right?
I have to say, South Carolina athletics, outside of the women's basketball team, which has been outstanding over the last couple of years, mostly mediocre. I mean, football team, you know, plays, sometimes Steve Spurrier had him with 11 wins. Baseball team won some titles. Basketball team has been hit or miss. But Cocky always seems to get voted the best mascot.
Yeah.
One of the best mascots in college sports. So
yep.
That's the one thing people do put their pride into at the University of South Carolina is the mascot is one of the top mascots in the country. So
do yourself a favor today, people. Check out this video.
That's awesome.
Cocky reveal.
All right.
Be careful how you spell everything.
That's very true. Right. Be careful. Not necessarily safe for work. What is the bat of the day?
The bat of the day. I got to give it to the World Video Game Hall of Fame.
There is a World Hall of Fame?
Yes, it's in Buffalo.
Okay.
You know, that makes it even more worldly. They announced their 2023 inductees. All right, and here's your four inductees into the World Video Game Hall of Fame. Barbie fashion designer.
Okay.
Computer space. And these last two, I guess I can understand. The Last of Us, I can see why they were nominated this year. And Wii Sports. And I do remember, you know, Wii Sports was revolutionary.
Why didn't Wii Sports catch on? Why didn't it last? Why aren't we doing that today? Has anybody done a deep dive into why that? Because there was a time from like 2008 to 2011.
Yeah.
That was the biggest. Like,
oh, man, I can remember this vividly. My cousin got it. And we were at his house for Thanksgiving. He and I stayed up to about 4 in the morning playing tennis. I woke up the next day, seriously, with tennis elbow.
That was awesome. Like, they brought this to senior centers for bowling and things like that.
It was great.
It was, like, golf. I remember playing the Wii Golf.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so fun. It was so fun.
I remember buying Tiger Woods golf.
Yeah, I remember that too.
And then doing, like, an actual golf match with a couple other people, and the game lasted 3 hours.
It was supposed to change the way we were doing video games. Like, we
right.
like instead of the controller, now your movement
controls
like
everything.
The Xbox Kinect was another thing, and now you could move and be in the video game. And then everyone went, nah, I want to go back to the controller.
I just want
to
sit down.
Where did it fall apart?
I'm not
like,
sure.
The reason I bring this up is funny because about a week ago, maybe a little over a week ago, somebody on our Facebook town's Facebook page was saying, "Does anybody have an old Wii?"
Yes,
because they were looking for one.
We're constantly looking for one.
Yeah,
I would love to get an old Wii and just put it up in our room, entertainment room.
So I had one. I don't have one anymore.
No,
but
I had one too.
I had the Wii board and everything, and we got rid of it.
I never did. We had the Wii board, but I never got into the exercise part.
No, I didn't either. I
thought
tried,
I would.
But it was. I did too. But you know, hey, how often can you hear that girl go, "You're obese," and I go, "All right, I know, I've got to lose some weight."
Because the first time was like, "You're damn right."
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, well, but don't you worry. 3 weeks into this, we'll be changing your tune.
Yep.
And then 4 months later, that's obese. Okay, I get it. Oh my God, how many times can I step up and down? Blink, blink,
so,
blink, 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 blink. I'm not losing any weight.
But the reason why this is bad is because of what some of these games got in over.
Okay.
Right? Some that are still on the shelf. Will be next year's nominees, apparently, is Angry Birds.
Angry Birds was great. Why isn't that?
And I think that, because did that kind of revolutionize app gaming on your phone?
I thought it did, yeah.
I mean, I know there were games beforehand, but this was like the first one outside of Solitaire.
I remember being resistant to download it, and then people were like, no, no, play Angry Birds.
You got to play, you got to play, you got to play.
I had it, and I was like, this is great.
Age of Empires, which I've never played, but I see the commercials all the time.
I see the commercials constantly.
Call of Duty 4, there's NBA.
Again, that should be classic.
Yeah, NBA 2K. That's another one that didn't get in. FIFA International Soccer, that's one. But the biggest one of all, and this is the one that hurts the most, and it might hurt you the most too, Tony.
What?
Is it's still not into the Hall of Fame yet. Will probably be a nominee next year. GoldenEye.
GoldenEye for the Nintendo was one of the greatest video games they ever had.
Of all time.
It's one of the greatest games. In fact,
I think it's the first person shooter game, right?
I believe it is. But it's so popular that if you have an Xbox, you can get it downloaded on the Game Pass. You can have it.
Can you, like the old?
You can get the old version of that game on the also on the Game Pass is the old Sega Genesis hockey game.
Okay,
like 1984.
Yeah.
You can get a copy of that. But yeah, they have the GoldenEye of old. You can play the GoldenEye of old as a classic game.
Yeah, I have no idea why that's not in.
I know.
It's phenomenal. I mean, it's from doing the mission to, you know, it was like the first one where you can go like, hey, you can get like, you know, a couple of your buddies to play it at the same time, all, you know, all in the house. That's part I had so much fun. I loved being the sniper.
Yeah.
Just kind of hiding up there and just shooting, picking them off one by one. I loved it.
That's great.
But yeah, for whatever reason, I mean, the reasoning behind Barbie fashion designer is because it was, you know, it came out in 1996 and it was the first game solely marketed to girls.
Oh, gotcha.
So I guess.
See,
I understand.
That is my problem with this is that I'm into video games, but I know that I don't know the whole industry, so I don't know why certain things would get in. But I don't know why I need an explanation as to why some aren't in.
And you know, video games have been a part of our lives our entire life.
Right.
I've never heard of computer space.
No, I've never heard of that either.
So I have no idea what that is. But I guess, I mean, The Last of Us is kind of like, you know, the same reason. I brought it up last week. Kate Bush got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Well,
you know.
The Last of
Media
Us.
Media influence.
Oh, I don't know. I never played The Last of Us.
Neither did I.
But when I
only know it as a TV show.
All right, here's the thing. I never played The Last of Us, but here's what I know of it. One, all my friends played it. Two, there was a guy that was, when I was into Red Dead Redemption, I was watching a video on it tutorial of it. And the guy said, this is the second best video game I have ever played. It's not quite The Last of Us. He kind of threw it out there.
Okay.
So I think The Last of Us is still considered one of the greatest video games, open world video games of all time. Even despite the fact that it's 2014, 15, when it came out.
But big snub of GoldenEye.
Yeah, GoldenEye was the big snub. All right, we'll continue next.
Get the dumb next.
The dumb neck.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We got the dumb from the good, the bad, and the dumb. And then we'll talk about Philadelphia 76ers now up 3-1. Noah Levick is going to join us, NBC Sports in Philly, on the Sixers. What a game last night for Joel Embiid. 33
points.
Fantastic game from him. Daniel House coming off the bench added 10. James Harden, they didn't need him to score 40. So the Sixers have been really... I mean, look, it's a 3-2 series lead, so it's not like the Celtics have been beaten up every game because they did get their two wins, but Philadelphia's, they're the better team right now. They are the better team. They're not up 3-2 because of some circumstance that Boston can shake off. The Celtics were beaten badly last night, so we'll get to that coming up. But now it's the dumb of the day.
Which I'm kind of glad that, you know, it got carried over because sometimes, you know, dumb needs to be investigated a little bit more. And the dumb of the day, I feel... has to go to the Los Angeles Dodgers.
All right, the LA Dodgers got the dumb. Okay, what did they do?
Well, it came to light that Mookie Betts is staying in an Airbnb. He rented out an Airbnb while the Dodgers are taking on Milwaukee, the Brewers in Milwaukee. And the reason why he's doing this is because the Dodgers are staying at the Pfister Hotel. I'm not sure.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. This was an NBA thing for years.
Yeah. And if you're unfamiliar with this place, this hotel is rumored to be haunted.
Yeah.
Now, Mookie Betts has came out and said, hey, I don't believe in ghosts, but I don't want to test fate either. And his fear was that knowing that people say this hotel is haunted, he would be up all night with every single sound that he
Absolutely.
Would hear.
Absolutely. And then you go to the ballpark exhausted.
Yeah. Why? Why? Yeah. There isn't like a Ritz-Carlton or something.
I was
could
just
stay
thinking
in.
That. Why are we staying there if it's haunted?
Do
why
you need adventure? No... Another challenge, Dodgers? I mean, is that it? You need a challenge? Like, oh.
Now, obviously, this hotel is 5-star because that's the provisions that the home team provides. Is they reserve the hotel for you. They,
yes.
That's kind of the like so. Milwaukee has gone to the, what's the name of the hotel again? The
Pfister
Hotel. I don't know. Pfister Hotel.
It's Pfister.
So they go and they say, look, we're gonna. This is our schedule. We're gonna need X amount of rooms. These times, and they work with the team, so they go, of course, we know what to expect, so that's what we do. We block these out for you. And then, so when you arrive, they've got those taken care of. Why can't, you're right, is there a Four Seasons? Is there a Marriott? No, I don't know about Marriott. Is Marriott up, Marriott's an upper-level hotel, right?
Apparently, this hotel, I mean, I guess a lot of teams stay at this hotel, and there's a lot of ghost stories coming up from it, but it's a very old hotel. It opened in 1893. Yeah. Bryce Harper.
God. Do they have a brandy room? Is that a brandy and cigar room?
Probably, right?
Women allowed? I mean, how long ago has this hotel been? Like, come on. I feel like it's the Titanic, right? Oh, the men go to the room to smoke cigars and have brandy.
Bryce Harper was talking about a time he stayed there last summer, and before he went to sleep, he laid out a pair of jeans and a shirt on the table at the foot of the bed. And when he woke up in the morning, everything was on the floor. and on the opposite side of the room.
Oh, God.
Brandon Phillips, everyone's favorite. Brandon Phillips talked about a time that for some reason the radio turned on. So he turned it off, got back into the – he was in the shower at the time and got in the shower. And when he was done, the radio was back on.
No, I'm out. That's how the creepy stuff starts.
Why
I saw 1408. I'm not messing around with that.
I mean, why not if you're going to go play the Colorado Rockies, why not stay at the Stanley Hotel, right?
Why not? Exactly.
If you're going to play the Padres, stay at the Hotel Del Coronado. It's an historic hotel.
God.
But, yes, I mean, these places are haunted. Let's not do this.
Like, remember that movie 1408 with John Cusack? Did you see that one?
No, I didn't.
Oh, good movie. See, you see everything. I'm surprised you didn't see it. Nah. It's based on a Stephen King novel.
I'm not really big on scary movies.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, this is a Stephen King novel about a haunted room in a hotel. Not a haunted hotel, a haunted room.
Right.
And everybody who stayed there goes mental and insane. And John Cusack plays a skeptic who debunks this stuff. And he goes, I want the room. And the hotel won't give it to him. And he finally convinces them. And he goes, all right, here's the deal. But... Samuel L. Jackson plays the hotel manager.
Of course.
And of course, the way he tells the stories of the room is frightening in and of itself, the way he talks about it. He goes, when we change over the room once a month, we do it in teams. So like they go only in there for a few minutes. You know, because one maid got locked in the bathroom and they found her strangled to death. Like things like that.
Yeah, no, thank you.
No, thank you.
No, I don't.
If I turned off a radio,
dumb to stay there.
If I turned off a radio and I went to the shower and I came back and that radio was on, I am checking out of the hotel.
Yeah, immediately.
I'm not going to account it to electrical glitch or something like that. No. Yeah.
So for me, I don't blame Mookie Betts for saying, no, I'll stay in an Airbnb. No. I'm good.
No, because he's right. He's right. If you.
Yeah, you're just going to be up all night long.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's like every single little sound that you hear, you're going to be up.
And I'm with Mookie Betts. I don't believe in ghosts, but it doesn't mean I haven't mentally freaked myself out at times
in certain situations. See, I'm on the fence. I mean, I did say I don't like scary movies,
right.
But I religiously watched Ghost Hunters back in the day.
Yeah.
I did not miss an episode of Ghost Hunters. I loved it. And I always hoped and prayed that they would catch something. And when they did, I became more and more of a believer. There's a video of, I don't know, they say it's Walt Disney walking the grounds at Disneyland. That, man, to me, that's a ghost.
Yeah.
You know, caught on a security camera. He's just, you know, just waltzing right through. I don't know. I mean, there's things that you can't explain sometimes. And it's like, yeah, maybe that is.
Yeah,
it.
Maybe that is. Maybe that is. I've gone downstairs, you know, in the middle of the night to get something to drink, and I've mentally freaked myself out. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I've done that before, but I've never encountered something where I went, that's spooky. That is so spooky, I can't explain it. I can't.
I remember walking through the Hotel Del Coronado, which is in San Diego, a very beautiful hotel. And you were just there kind of visiting, you know, kind of checking. That's what people do a lot of times is, it's such a historic hotel. You go and there's like shops and restaurants. You go there and just walk around, you know, grab a lunch or whatever. But the hotel is rumored to be haunted. And we found the room that was haunted. We kept asking people, so a lot of people wouldn't tell us. But we finally found someone who said, oh, no, it's this room right here. Just head to the up there. I remember walking near that room and it was just you had a different feeling. And I don't know if I did that to myself. Because I didn't know the exact room number. We just knew the kind of location that it was by this one stairwell. And, you know, you just kind of started walking around. And then there was just like an uneasy feeling around one room. And I don't know if that was, you know, if that was psychosis taking over. Like we kind of did it towards it. But it wasn't just me. It was, you know, the party that we were with. And everyone else was kind of feeling like, yeah, just there's an uneasy feeling right here. And it's the room that was rumored to be haunted. We found that out after, that we found the right room.
And I never discount people's stories. Like, I'm not one of those. I always find, like, I don't know, some people who want to debunk that stuff, I find them rude. Because if somebody tells me that in the middle of the night, their grandmother appeared to them and comforted them in a time, I'm not going to tell them that I don't believe in ghosts. Like, that's not my time to say, yeah, it was probably your hallucination or it was probably the dumplings you ate that night.
What'd you eat?
Like, yeah, exactly. I'm going to be like, whatever.
Kind of mushrooms
awesome.
Were on that pizza.
Yeah, and I know I told you the story once. My grandfather had passed away. I delivered his eulogy. Exactly 1 year later, I was watching I was at Coors Field attending a baseball game, and my grandfather was a huge baseball fan, and a ball came into the press box and landed at my foot. Now, got the baseballs in the press box was very, very, very rare.
Right.
And in fact, it was so rare that the ball hit the back wall and bounced up to my foot, and they circled it and they put a frame around it to say that the ball had come into the press box. It's kind of a cool thing because it dented the wall. And instead of fixing it, they just thought it would be cool. And it had to come at this very weird angle. And the ball was hit by Timo Perez of the New York Mets. And my grandfather's favorite baseball team was the New York Mets. And I remember, like, I still have it. It's in a case in my office. I'll buy the theory that was a little gift from heaven. Sure. Yeah. But I don't have, like, evidence of that. You know what I mean? Like, there's no, you know, but those are the feelings people have in those circumstances that I don't want to be discounted. I don't want to just chalk that up to coincidence. I just, even though it probably is, but I don't want to do that.
But I mean,
so I don't do that to other people. But so good for Mookie Betts. Get an Airbnb. I wouldn't mess with that stuff.
No, I wouldn't either. Because I mean, he's absolutely right. I mean, any little sound you hear, you're popping up. You know, you're probably looking out the door like, what was that? You know, checking down the hallway. No one's out here. Or worst case scenario, you check down the hallway and you see a shadowy figure at the end. And
oh, good Lord. Now that that's enough. If I see a shadowy figure, I'm waking everybody up and
you're running through there like Paul Revere,
right? Exactly. I'm waking everybody up. No.
Going to the Holiday Inn.
Yeah, if I see the Slender Man or anything creepy like that, like all these people have cited over the years, Mothman, Smiling Man, all of these that have been around over the years. I ain't messing with that. I ain't messing with a 7'7" slender, smiling alien. No, thank you. No, thank you. All right, we're going to talk Sixers. How are they pulling this off against the number 2 seed in the East, the Boston Celtics? Noah Levick will join us next.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, we're making things even easier. We'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Noah Levick joins us, NBC Sports Philadelphia, to talk Sixers, now up 3-2 in their series as they beat Boston in Boston in Game 4 last night. How are you, Noah?
Hey, doing all right. Thanks for having me on.
This is a team in a franchise history. They've never won a game five on the road in a 2-2 series. They did it last night. Look, how have you seen these five games, these four games, how have you, or five games for that matter? How have you seen it, the way Philadelphia has attacked Boston? What's the general over feeling of what's working for them?
Yeah, it's been really unpredictable and honestly just a weird series because Joel Embiid misses the first game and then in that second game, he comes back and is playing through the right knee sprain, but is obviously a bit tentative initially. I think the last couple, we've seen a more typical version of Embiid. He's getting the double-digit free throws, and it's been effective for the Sixers to just go to him in the post because Boston, for the most part, has trusted Al Horford, who does tend to be relatively sturdy on Embiid, and Embiid has given the Sixers timely buckets in the last couple. The major X factor, if you want to call it that, is just James Harden. The performances were so up and down in the first four games. And then again, I think last night was great for the Sixers in that it was like, okay, this is the guy we got in the regular season. He's going to be really smart about how to facilitate our offense. He's going to pick the right spots to attack, which I thought he did late in the first quarter. And he's just going to conduct things in a way that makes everyone else better. It was also huge for them that Tyrese Maxey had his best game in the series, scoring 30 points and taking 12 threes, making six of them. So I think for the Sixers, Embiid is inevitably the hub of the offense. That's how they want to play. And Harden, it's his responsibility to figure out where the best spots for him are on the court, what matchups they can attack. And I think the decision-making from Harden these last two games has been the biggest reason why the Sixers have gotten the points they've needed to take a lead in the series.
I think the answer to this is somewhere in the middle, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How much of this series has been Philadelphia taking Boston out of their game, and how much of it is Boston taking themselves out of their game?
Yeah, I think the latter choice there, I might lean stronger toward that, honestly.
Yeah.
I think Doc Rivers has coached a very strong series thus far. All the little adjustments he's made have been effective. You know, notably last night brings Daniel House Jr. into the rotation, and House has a really nice impact as an athletic wing off the bench, gives them 10 points. So, yeah, I think Rivers has been there, done that, and is super experienced for better and for worse in these spots. And look, Joe Mazzulla is 34 years old. It's his first time going through this. And I think just the ability to navigate his team out of trouble, it has been lacking thus far. And then you also look just at the way Boston has started these past two games. Jason Tatum, I believe, was 0-for-8 at the start of game four, and he was 0-for-6 to begin last night. So if your best player is just unable to produce at that severe level, I do think you have to assign a bit of the blame to the Boston end and just say, look, this is the defending Eastern Conference champions. There should be a greater level of resilience, and there should be just a greater capacity to figure things out when they start going downhill. But obviously, Embiid is fantastic on both ends of the court. And if you make mistakes or if you fall into a deficit, he's the kind of guy who is just going to punish that. And the Sixers have gotten, you know, a really strong version of Embiid these past two games. And Boston last night, to me, looked just stunningly vulnerable against a very strong version of the Sixers.
You talked about Embiid, and with Harden, these two combinations is just been incredible to watch. Talk about the Sixers and the pick and roll and how they utilize and how effective that is for their offense.
Yeah, they've really done their best to fine-tune this and drilled it over and over. James Harden has talked about he actually enjoys the challenge of working through possession by possession and identifying how exactly a defense is guarding them and, you know, what the best spots to attack are. So last night, it was a bit surprising to me that Boston really stuck with a pretty traditional drop coverage for the most part, and therefore the results were Joel Embiid, who's evolved into an excellent mid-range shooter, getting a bunch of those pocket passes and good mid-range looks. And Embiid said, you know, I miss some shots I normally make. And personally, I agree with him. I think he had some narrow misses, and I don't think that's a great scheme on Boston's end for the shot they're living with to be a Joel Embiid mid-range jumper. You know, earlier in this series, they were much more inclined to switch, and you know, now they've turned away from that, and I think felt decent for the most part about Al Horford as an isolation defender. But James Harden, you know, he's led the league in assists this year for the second time in his career. He's a three-time scoring champion, and I think this series is probably leading a lot of folks to just have a higher level of appreciation for the offensive genius he is. I think, yes, he is in all likelihood past his prime and diminished in some ways physically, but the intelligence is still extraordinarily high, and he's enjoyed working in tandem with Embiid, and I think it feels like they're hitting their stride with that pick and roll. There are times in, you know, the past 2 years where there have been growing pains, or there's been some indecision about, okay, you know, which mismatch is best for us, or, you know, how do we go about attacking this particular matchup? But now it feels like those guys are 100% of the time on the same page, and you have the scoring champ, the MVP, and you have the assist champ on your team, and a guy who scored 40-plus twice this series. Just on its face, that's really formidable stuff offensively for the Sixers.
Yeah, and with James Harden, those before that game last night, the two games that Philadelphia won, he had over 40 points in each one of them. But last night, a nice double-double of 17 and 10, 33 for Embiid. Daniel House, you mentioned, with 10. Is that a better way for the Sixers to win? Do they need Joel Embiid to get 30-plus points? I mean, I'm sorry, James Harden getting 30-plus points? I mean, obviously 40 is nice, but they need explosive scoring from James Harden?
I think it just depends a lot on what the defense is presenting. Like I thought Harden in game four was really methodical about identifying when the matchups were especially favorable and just really ruthless about matchup hunting on Malcolm Brogdon in particular and exploiting those minutes. But yeah, I think this is a nice formula for the Sixers though. They love when Tobias Harris is getting open looks. And Tyrese Maxey, they most definitely see him as a guy who can consistently score 20, 30-plus for them. And look, Doc Rivers has said over and over again, we're at our best when Tobias and Tyrese are getting open looks because that's indicative of ball movement and cohesive, flowing offense. So they'll take, you know, whatever is effective in a given game and see what the defense is presenting to them. But I think moving forward, they very much like the offensive approach last night, and I think believe in Maxey and Harris as excellent number three and number four guys for them.
All right, real quick, and it's a minute, but I want you to help me with this season. There were a lot of people that were a little cautious on Philadelphia in the playoffs. What was it in the regular season? Was there something that was brewing with this team that where they're exercising some demon out of them in these playoffs?
Yeah, look, I mean, they started the regular season poorly, and it was disappointing and concerning. They got to a point where they were 1-4, and Doc Rivers was having very frank discussions about, like, we're playing abysmal, historically bad transition defense, and our habits need to improve there. Eventually, they righted the ship a bit. They got back to 12-12, and then you look since that point, they were, you know, the NBA's best team for the remainder of the season. So perhaps some folks tuned out and said, I'm not sure I buy this version of the Sixers. But, you know, for the vast majority of the season, they were excellent. And I think the offseason pickups were clearly adding a lot of value to this team in terms of, you know, D'Anthony Melton as a nice sixth man for this club who's, you know, a two-way guy they have a ton of faith in, and then P.J. Tucker. You know, there's been a ton of, you know, lauding of his intangible impact, right? Like, the stat sheet is rarely going to blow you away, but he has been brutally honest with anyone and everyone. Like, he has no qualms about getting in Joel Embiid's face, whether that's in front of the cameras or behind closed doors. And just as the season developed, you heard more and more about this being a team that didn't mind those tough, frank conversations, was going to be better equipped to handle the playoffs due to their increased toughness, due to their depth, due to their, you know, higher amount of two-way players compared to last postseason. So, yeah, I think there were ingredients cooking, but like we all know, the playoffs are pretty random and there are fine margins, and this team would be in a bad spot, right, if James Harden hadn't rescued them in Game 4. So,
no doubt.
Yeah, good stuff from the Sixers to put it all together here.
Noah Levick, again, NBC Sports Philadelphia, as Philadelphia has a 3-2 series lead now on the Celtics as they'll be hosting Game 6. Thank you so much, Noah. Appreciate your time this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio as we head to hour number 3.